Steve Gowdy sat in a comfortable chair on the top level of a darkened control room in the heart of Vandenberg Air Force Base. The setting resembled the NASA command centers in Houston and at Cape Canaveral, but was smaller and stocked with military personnel instead of civilians. Gowdy was in his late 40s. He wore a gray polo shirt and black slacks, his thin covering of sandy brown hair perfectly coiffed, but too thin to conceal his scalp beneath. He looked like a golfer ready to play 18 holes at the local country club, a visitor on a day tour, or a bored middle manager stuck in another endless meeting. Only the tightly bunched wrinkles around his eyes and the unconscious drumming of his finger on the arm of the chair suggested he was paying close attention. Gowdy hadn't come to Vandenberg for a tour of the place, or to marvel at the technology, but to oversee the final stage of a mission so secret, only 40 people in the entire world knew of its existence. The project was called Ruby Snow, which meant nothing, of course, but had a poetic ring to it that Gowdy appreciated. It involved an aircraft funded by the National Security Agency and operated by the Air Force and other members of the Defense Department. Aircraft was the wrong word, he reminded himself. The Nighthawk was a hybrid vehicle, part aircraft, part spacecraft. The latest in a long line of platforms descended from the space shuttle. It was the most advanced machine ever flown, and was finally returning to Earth after 3 long years in orbit. A large storm brewing over the Pacific had caused the NSA to move the re-entry up by a full week, but other than that, everything had gone according to plan. Watching the re-entry live, Gowdy stared at the huge, high-definition screens that made up the front wall of the room. One showed a column of numbers and symbols that honestly meant nothing to him, except that all of them remained green. A second display showed a chart with a line that dove sharply from the upper left-hand corner before leveling out across the middle, and then beginning to drop again on the right side. Labeled Nighthawk Descent Profile, the chart had something to do with the altitude, speed, and distance of the aircraft. But he kept his attention glued to the central display, where a global satellite map showed the Pacific Ocean and the west coasts of North, South, and Central America. Icons representing the Nighthawk and lines tracing its path were drawn in bright colors. Because the Nighthawk flew in an unusual polar orbit, the re-entry path originated over Antarctica, cutting across the globe at a diagonal angle. It had flown past New Zealand, passing to the east by less than 100 miles, and from there it drew a line directly over the top of the Cook Islands and Tahiti. It passed south of Hawaii, and its projection continued toward Vandenberg and the high deserts of California. It still had several thousand miles to go, but traveling at over 5,000 miles per hour meant less than 40 minutes before touchdown. An echoing call rang out over the loudspeaker system known as the Loop. Vehicle is cleared max Q, an anonymous voice said. Heat shield secure. Temperatures dropping. Max Q. That was a term Gowdy knew. A danger point. The point of maximum aerodynamic stress on the craft. A point where any weakness or damage would likely result in structural failure and loss of the craft. Hearing that the Nighthawk had passed Max Q reduced Gowdy's anxiety a bit. Many things could still go wrong, catastrophically wrong, but the largest hurdle had been cleared. He glanced down to the middle tier of the amphitheater-style room. That level was the domain of the flight director. In this case, an Air Force colonel named Frank Hansen. Hansen was a steely-eyed veteran of 30 years, a former fighter jock and test pilot who'd survived 2 ejections and a crash in his time, and was now head of the 9th Space Operations Squadron. Hansen turned, made eye contact, and offered a nod. So far, so good. Among all the controllers and system specialists and experts, Hansen was the only man in the room, aside from Gowdy himself, who understood just what a monumental risk they were taking. And if Gowdy measured him right, Hansen was just as nervous.